How's your car looking? Showing its age? Faded paint? Dents? Dings? Don't worry. Maaco is here to help. They're the experts in affordable paint jobs and light collision repairs, helping you keep your car looking its best without breaking the bank. With Maaco's national reach and community focus, you're not just getting top-notch service. You're actually getting a partner you can trust. Visit your local Maaco today and see how they can refresh your ride. Go in, get the free estimate, and the expert technicians will handle the rest. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out. So you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics. They're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Hey, what is up, everybody?
And welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast, episode 355. And boy, do we have a weird one for you today. You could say that we are here to spill the tea.
Ooh.
That was good.
That was actually good.
That one wasn't as strong.
And why are we spilling the tea?
The Celestial Seasonings
tea.
Did you know that there's very strange, bizarre, scary, quite racist, to be honest, origins behind this tea. But
and a very
no longer. So don't sue us.
Yes. No.
Y'all are free. And
wonderful company. Right here in Colorado, by the way.
Yeah.
Right up north, up in the great city of Boulder.
Gotta say this
headquarters.
This tea right here, the Sleepy Time, was such a big part of my childhood. My mom always made this for us.
It's a fire-ass tea.
What, is there melatonin
in
it?
No. It.
Oh, it's melatonin-free.
Yeah,
it's just chamomile, spearmint, lemongrass,
lavender,
tilia flowers, blackberry leaves, hawthorn, and rosebuds.
Clean.
God, remember, Janelle, when we used to make Sleepy Time tea at my house and we'd put so much sugar in
it? Yeah, then it wasn't Sleepy Time tea.
No, it was
energy time.
Ass up tea. It was sleepover tea.
Yeah, baby. With a little milk in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like half milk.
Yeah. Fire.
Yeah. This is a rather strange episode with very, very out there extraterrestrial ideas. It's really mainly going to be about this book called The Urantia.
Whack ass book.
Long ass book. And it reads like a spiritual epic story. Featuring Jesus, though. Jesus got a big big role.
Cameo.
Big role.
I guess pretty big.
No, he's got like 800 pages in this 2,000-page book dedicated to him, his life, and all the things that he did. Because
for him,
the Urantia has sort of some different ideas about who Jesus really was and what did he do and what was his purpose here.
Was he an alien?
Was he as significant as, you know, other religions and Theosophies, you know, mm-hmm. sort of put him. Was he the son of God or was he one son of many? That's debated here in the Urantia, which the origins of the book is the strangest part of this.
Yeah, because no one knows what the origins are, although we're pretty fucking sure.
We have a pretty good idea of where it comes from.
This book is...
but it's got sort of a legendary tale behind it. It's a channeled piece of literature, which is always interesting to me. Channelers are something that I find very interesting. People claim to channel extraterrestrial beings, divine beings, celestial beings, and receive messages, you know, psychic messages. And that's exactly where this book comes from. And then the founder of Celestial Seasonings, who we'll talk about quite a bit as well, he was very impacted by this literature and played a big part in the founding of Celestial Seasonings originally when he started it.
But he, in my opinion,
but
a lunatic.
But it's got some, it's got some very controversial.
This whole book is.
Things going on, which we'll get into in quite amount of depth. So hang on.
I'd say like dip your toes in amount of depth, right? Not that much depth. It's a long book.
It's a long book. I read, you know, a good chunk of it, mainly the racist parts, just because I was like, all right, let's see how bad it is. It's very bad.
It's very bad.
This is a toe dipping. This is a toe dipping.
Yeah, yeah. It's all you need, though. You shouldn't be dipping much more than that in this shit.
Don't go waist deep in your
engine. Definitely not. No.
You'll drown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, drown. You may never come out.
Well, it's available free for download, as it is.
Excellent.
We'll link it down below.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored.
And there's a whole, but there's a whole foundation, the Urantia Foundation, which the founder of Celestial Seasonings is now the president of, and they are a 501(c) nonprofit.
Okay, don't give away everything about the
episode. No, I'm not. There's still lots more to go over here. But let's just play a little clip reminding everybody of what Celestial Seasonings is, the magic of this brand. And here's a little clip from, this is an old clip. This is like from 15 years ago. So I'm sure they've done some updating on their tours. Maybe someone out there has been on a Celestial Seasonings tour, which they do give, I believe, are free as well.
I can't believe we've never done that.
I've done it.
Oh, you have, right? I remember that.
Yeah, and it was a blast.
You've done it twice.
I think so.
Yeah.
I remember liking it a lot.
Yeah? What do you remember about it?
My biggest thing that I remember is there's an entire room of peppermint leaves that they make their tea with, and you walk in, it's like this giant room with tons of shelves of just peppermint, and immediately your nostrils are just like,
whoa, I bet, dude. If you're sick and you went in there.
Mm-hmm. It smells really good.
That's what tea I'm drinking right now, the peppermint.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the peppermint,
same.
Too.
Mm-hmm. Cheers, everybody.
Oh, cheers.
Cheers. Josh didn't want any. He's not really a tea man.
Aww. I like to eat the tea.
Cheers from afar.
Or what? Smoke it sometimes.
What?
Dude, he is, I don't know what to say
Me
about
and my
Josh
brother
today.
Used to
He's
smoke
on one.
No,
Celestial
you
Seasonings.
I don't even believe
no,
it.
I'm,
no,
I'm
5 seconds.
I'm dead serious. No,
shut up. I've never heard this.
No, I swear to you.
Oh, wait.
My
actually,
brother
I do
remember and this. I were young, dumb, and broke.
And emphasis so on dumb, my God.
And so we would go into my mama's cupboard and we get the Celestial Seasonings out. We'd cut the bags open, put it in a little pipe and smoke
Wait,
the
Celestial
Seasonings.
Wait, what the lamest shit I've ever heard. What did you think was happening? That you were like getting ready for bed? Like getting just blast off to night time?
Where did you get the pipe?
High as fuck.
We crafted it usually.
Out of like
tinfoil.
I mean, we had an apple for a long time.
You smoked Celestial Seasonings.
Water bottles.
Your mother's tea out of a fucking makeshift pipe.
Hell
that is some sad, sad. That's sad.
Hey, you know what? You gotta do what you gotta do. We lived out in the middle of the boonies and nothing
else. I didn't
was
live in the boonies. I still wasn't smoking tea.
Actually, some tea though definitely gives you a little bit of a nice little buzz.
Okay.
But it
Maybe
also tastes
like
great
12.
As well. It tastes good as well. Hey, I was like 15, all right?
Tripping on the tea. All right, let's take a look at Celestial Seasonings, though.
So hi, awesome. Welcome to Celestial Seasonings. I'm Steve Spencer, Guest Relations Ambassador.
I hope Steve's
We're
nice
located
guy.
Here
nice.
In Boulder, Colorado, the home of Celestial Seasonings, and everything we make comes from this one facility. We started here in 1969 when Mo Siegel and a group of friends had the idea of blending wild herbs together. We source over 100 ingredients from 35 countries, inspect them here in our facility, and produce 70 varieties of teas. Some of our favorite teas include Sleepy Time, Peppermint, Chamomile, our new green teas, and now our new wellness line has been very popular. We mill, mix, and package all of our ingredients here in this one facility. The first step is milling, where our herbs and teas
Boring.
Are cleaned, cut, and sifted. For milling, the ingredients go to mixing where they're blended to create magical flavors like Sleepy Time and authentic green tea.
I love watching factories.
And
so
now to packaging.
So
here in this room, you'll see how the boxes are formed. The tea goes into the tea bags into the boxes.
Wow,
the boxes are closed, wrapped in cellophane,
tea
and put
the bags,
in the cardboard
bags
case.
In the boxes.
Not intended for
visitors
smoking.
Can sample over 70 varieties of tea in our tea sampling bar.
Mm-hmm.
Visit our art gallery of original paintings, our cafe, and our herb garden.
Look how colorful.
We have over 140,000 people visit us from around the world to take the tour of the facility to see, taste, and smell the world of Celestial Seasonings.
There's
and of course, the
room.
Tour ends at a gift shop where you can see
wait,
a variety of t-shirts that you might not have found in your
just bags of.
And of course, the tour ends at a gift shop where you can see a variety of t-shirts that you might not have found in your local stores, and many interesting products like teacups, teapots, aprons, and a wide variety of tea paraphernalia.
Teapots. Ooh, lollipops.
We're excited to be featured as the best factory tour on official Best of Colorado. We hope to see you soon.
You will.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So this is the old packaging, what we have here.
No.
There's a new packaging now. Yes, correct.
How old is that?
I don't know. I think these are quite
no,
old.
No, I think they unveiled the new stuff fairly recently.
It is. And like we were saying before, it's been like this I consider classico, but the new stuff is urgent carify.
Oh,
like,
yeah, it is
looks
this.
Terrible.
Yeah. Because this is an old box, because this is about to expire in like 2 months.
This is the new one here.
Yeah, they're starting to phase. Yeah, it kind of looks like it'd be on Rite Aid shelves.
I exactly. like the old.
Yeah.
Yeah, the newer stuff, I don't know. The old ones are cool.
But maybe they're going to keep this and then just for their sort of wellness blends, they're doing a different packaging.
I love the peppermint one on that where it almost looks like Candyland or something. And then this peach one I've got, peach and probiotics, has like the peach is sparkly.
I bet you did. They're doing this because they really have two different product lines here. They have what be considered a supplement based on the other ingredients that they're putting in here, like melatonin and ashwagandha and things like that. And then the other is a food product. So they're probably kind of trying to separate the two lines in which retail locations so it doesn't confuse people. So maybe they are. Maybe they're not getting rid of the other branding. They're just kind of separating them.
Here's what Josh was smoking.
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you. I mean, when my mom found that in a baggie, she was very
confused.
Suspicious. But I was like, just smell it, mom. She's like, oh, let's brew it up. So, you know, legendary product. I'm sure almost everybody out there has at least tried it at some point. But let's talk about Mo. You know, they name dropped him in
he
that
did.
Tour.
I'm surprised they even mentioned him by name. I guess they kind of have to, but.
Well, this is from 15 years ago as well. So that was an old. So maybe new factory tours are like, yeah, it was some unknown guy. We don't know what his
name
was.
I want to go on the tour and like harass him a little bit about
that's
this.
That's so mean.
No.
Why would you do that to people?
Okay, you're right. That is mean. I just want to know what they would say. Like, so tell us more about Mo. Tell us about the origins. Like, what is
what's
his beliefs?
His favorite book?
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Have you guys heard of Urantia?
Yeah.
They probably have a...
Don't
they probably
worry,
have an
Janelle.
Immediate...
I'm actually going to go harass them. You know me. I'm, like, afraid to do anything.
Yeah,
so I would never do that. But I am curious what they would say if you were to ask them.
All right.
This.
Let's talk about Mo, though.
Yeah. Mo Money.
Mo Money.
By the late 1960s, Mo Siegel was a hippie with an entrepreneurial spirit. He was born in 1950, and he was raised in Palmer Lake, which is a small, very rural town in the foothills of southern Colorado.
It's kind of it's in between Colorado Springs and Denver.
Okay.
I actually was going to, this was like one of the places we were going to go to for a picnic for Mother's Day.
Oh.
I was going to go down to Palmer Lake,
and
but
we
didn't.
Else.
We went somewhere else.
Yeah.
That was better.
It was better. It was very cute. But at the age of 8, he was walking into the forest and picking wild berries before he sold them to his neighbor. So he started off very young with the entrepreneurship.
Hopefully it wasn't poison berries.
No.
Hopefully he knew what berries to pick. Because some of those berries are toxic, dude.
Well, clearly he knew what he was doing out there picking stuff because he made this whole fucking brand.
True. This episode is brought to you by a company that we're big fans of here at Mile High Media. And it's a company that has really come in clutch so many times over the years, and that is Upwork. Because what seems like a long, long time ago when we were first starting our podcast, you know, we didn't have the budget to go and get full-time employees to come on board and help produce the show. So what did we do? Well, we did it ourselves for a long time until that just became way too overbearing. And so we went to Upwork.com and we found all sorts of talented writers, editors, graphic designers, you name it. They have the talent there at Upwork, and they have always been just a great resource for us, even to this day. If we, you know, for some reason, three of our employees are all out of pocket at the same time, then we can always go to Upwork to get support. Plus, they have a global marketplace filled with top talent in all sorts of other different categories, even IT, web development, admin support, marketing. I mean, if you're looking for temporary help or you're looking for contracted help, stop looking. Because freelancers on Upwork cost way less than hiring full-time or even going through a staffing agency. You get to post your job and then people apply to it. You can see who you like the best and then start contracting with them. Upwork is convenient, it's cost-effective, and transparent. There's no subscriptions, no upfront fees, and you only pay when you hire. And posting a job is free, fast, and extremely simple. So if you're trying to stretch your budget and keep things moving, then you need to try Upwork because they've got you. If you've never tried Upwork, well, now's the perfect time because they're giving our listeners a $200 credit after spending $1,000 in your first 30 days. That's $200 you can put toward your next freelancer, design help, AI automation, admin support, marketing, whatever your business needs. Visit upwork.com/save right now for this great offer. That's upwork.com/save to get $200 credit put towards your next freelancer to help grow your business. That's upwork.com/save. Upwork.com/save. Don't wait, because this offer is only valid from June 24th through August 5th, 2025.
But while not much is known about Mo's upbringing, it's clear that he stood at the intersection of many different faiths and spiritualities. Though he was of Jewish descent, he attended the Abbey for his primary education, a monastery and college prep school in Canyon City, Colorado. And he briefly attended Western State College in Gunnison, but still, he dropped out to work at a natural food store in Aspen, because where else? Well, lots of natural food stores here in Colorado, but Aspen would definitely be one of those places. But when he was there, he was introduced to more of that natural lifestyle, and more importantly, the growing hippie movement. And after his time in Aspen, Mo did some coursework at the University of Colorado Boulder, where he eventually made his fortune. As you saw, the factory is in Boulder. And while working at a local tea shop, he noticed the success of an Asian herbal tea. So he's like, let me just steal that idea. Because the idea that tea could be herbal was a relatively new idea in the West, since most teas sold in the US and England contained the plant Camellia sinensis, which is used in many different caffeinated teas. Now, Mo was familiar with Colorado's flora. And since childhood, as we know, he had been berry picking, and he thought he could easily pick enough herbs to make a tea blend. Of course he could do it. So Mo invited his fiance, Peggy, his friend Wick Hay, and Wick's girlfriend, Lucinda Zeezing, on a trip to go herb hunting in the Rocky Mountains, which honestly sounds so fun. And on their first hike in 1969, the small team harvested enough herbs for 500 pounds of tea.
Damn.
And they sold a used Volkswagen to devote their time to packaging this tea. And after handpicking the herbs, they dried them out on screen doors and then cut them up using paper cutters and then packaged them in hand-sewn muslin bags. They even used scrap telephone wire to create the plastic sheathing to tie the bags. And finally, their first tea, called Mo's 36 Herb Tea, was ready to be sold to the Green Mountain Granary.
You might think, man, I bet that tea tastes like garbage. No.
I don't think anyone was thinking
that. Trash tea.
No, that tea was not trash. That tea was banging. It was an instant success. In the first year alone, they were slinging. This small little team was slinging 10,000 bags of Mo's blend, dude, to the granary. How awesome is that?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
They're slinging that tea like, hey, 36 herbs, 36 herbs.
That's why I call him Mo Money. He knew all along.
And so 10,000 bags, I mean, even they sell them at $1 a pop as 10 G's. And they were probably selling it for even more than that. So they made some good little bit of money there. And they got to work on the next tea that is the all-time selling tea for Celestial Seasonings. Sleepy Time.
Sleepy Time.
I actually believe it's the most selling just tea in general.
In the, like, the world.
In the world.
That's what I looked up to. That's what I saw. I'm going to open it and do a little smell to remind myself. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, dude. It takes me right back.
They have all, like, spinoffs now. They've got, like, Vanilla Sleepy Time, Peppermint Sleepy Time,
yes.
Extra Sleepy Time.
Mm. Oh, this reminds me of, like, drinking out of a sippy cup on my basement floor.
Dude, Sleepy Time tea or Celestial needs to make a collab with the weed brand. Hit us with a Sleepy Time tea gummy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Or like something you can actually smoke, Josh.
Yeah.
There you go. A smokable
a
Sleepy Time. Copper.
Like Keith, but, you know, a topper.
Yeah.
There you go. So at this point, they've got a little company going, right? They're like, all right, well, we got to come up with a company name. And so Mo chose Lucinda's nickname. She was so attractive, the kids apparently used to say, she was seasoned in heaven. And therefore was celestial. I don't know if I believe that or not.
I think that's a fucking lie, like, that's man.
That's a nice story, but...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's where the name comes from, apparently. And chances are you've had a cup of delicious celestial seasonings at some point in your life, or maybe you've smoked it like I have. And you might even still have a box of celestial in your pantry, in your cupboard,
yeah,
in your kitchen somewhere.
Leave a comment.
At
do you
desk.
Have one in your house?
Yeah. Tell us right now. Do you own a box right now? Go look. But since the 1970s, these guys have just been slinging tea. I mean, they're slinging tea like nobody's business, and they're doing it from one facility
well,
here
not,
in Colorado.
It's not these guys anymore. Different guys now.
Yes, exactly. This isn't Moe's company anymore.
No, thankfully.
But I tracked down a Celestial Seasonings commercial featuring the man himself, Moe Siegel. It's very poor quality because it's from like 80 years ago, but let's play.
80 years ago.
Hi, I'm Moe Siegel, president and founder of Celestial Seasonings Herb Teas. Celestial Herb Teas are so delicious. There's no caffeine. They don't give you the jitters, no artificial anything. They're about the healthiest, best-tasting drink you can have in the summertime. Red Zinger, Lemon Ice Delight, such delicious iced herb teas. To welcome you to the refreshing world of Celestial Seasonings iced herb teas, we're making a special offer. We'll send you our two newest tea canisters featuring the art from our Almond Sunset and Peppermint Tea packages, plus six packets of Red Zinger and our new Cranberry Cove tea, citrus-filled flavors that are delicious. Plus, four 25-cent coupons towards your next Celestial purchase, all for only $9.95. To order, call us at this toll-free number. Next time when you're really thirsty, have a delicious glass of Celestial Seasonings iced herb teas.
Damn.
Celestial Seasonings, soothing teas for a nervous world.
Soothing teas for a nervous world.
And you know what? That's still being fine today.
That is very true.
Wow, that's crazy. What a deal. Yeah. $9.95 plus $2.50 for shipping. It's pretty good. But you got a call to get it? Wow, what a different time.
Well, you remember they came in the little tins.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I remember that from this morning. I was like, there were little metal tins.
Yeah, and there's still brands that sell it in tins. I always get those ones because they look like fancy, cute.
Behind the scenes, behind the man, behind the company's name, there's Urantia.
There is nothing good.
And, you know, as we've been talking about at the beginning, it's the Urantia book. And it's an over 2,000-page book that really claims to have the history of the world and knowledge for the future written all over its gazillion pages. And like we said, the author is unknown.
It's 2,000 pages, just to clarify.
It is. The author is unknown, which I don't know if that makes it any better. But it's unknown.
I think it makes it worse.
Because all of this knowledge is said to have come from celestial beings, which can be interpreted a lot of different ways. Some interpret it as aliens. Some interpret it as like divine angelic beings, something from another dimension or something along those lines. Because aliens, from what I understand, is not mentioned in the text. Like, they don't use the word alien in it.
Okay.
So alien is just kind of one interpretation of these celestial beings that came up with all this. Mo has gone on record with his love, admiration, appreciation for the Urantia book. And he's talked quite a bit over the years about it and still talking about it to this day. But one of his quotes said, "The Urantia book has been life-changing. Those ideals were the inspiration for the uplifting quotes that we now used to print on the side of our tea boxes, because wanted bold and I found bold. I wanted spiritual adventure and I was on the ride of my life."
And I'm going to make other people get on that ride too by putting it on their tea.
Right.
They have no idea where it's coming from.
Ethical dilemma, anyone?
Mm-hmm.
A little side of eugenics with that tea today. It's just insane.
God.
I have looked deeply and cannot find any author associated with the book, but that is not the point because I love what it says.
I don't care who wrote this shit. It's great.
I am a much better person because of the Urantia book's teachings. So, with that being said, here is a recent clip that I found of Mr. Mo, and he kind of summarizes very quickly his journey to finding the book, his childhood, and just sort of gives you a better idea of who we're talking about for the rest of this episode. So let's play this clip. It's about 2 minutes or so.
I was in the Soviet Union in 1979, and they have these beautiful prints that they put on these little lacquer boxes that they paint. And back then, I had the thought, wouldn't it be great if the Urantia book could have illustrations?
Oh, yeah.
For my own personal journey, I spent 2 years at a college prep school in a monastery, a Catholic monastery. I lived there for 2 years. And I had gone into that monastery as a completely lost soul, having been raised really in the mountains of Colorado with no big religious viewpoint, except my father was Jewish and my mother, who was killed when I was very young, was born Christian. And I had been reading at age, I don't know, 14, 15, the most dreary, awful stuff on existentialism. And it, Kafka and Camus and Marcel and all that just awful stuff. And I went into the monastery, and I was really lucky that a Catholic priest took me under his wing. And maybe I was the only student in those 2 years that was interested. But he taught me about Teilhard de Chardin. And I listened, loved it. And then within a couple of years after leaving, I found the Urantia book, thankfully. And so from early on, the idea of the untold story was in my brain. And I've been very fortunate in my life in that art has been a part of my life. And I was involved in this company for many years. And it was our art, besides our product line, that made our brand the number one specialty tea brand in North America. And I was lucky because we had a big art department. We had 7 or 8 people in our art department, and we hired the best artist that we could find. We spent really a lot of money on the art, which helped our branding. So by the time I got to the Untold Story of Jesus, I had, 30 years of experience of directing an art department. So the training turned out to be quite useful.
I'm going to have to cut some of that down. It's like boring as shit. Why are we watching that?
No, it's interesting because it's telling you, it's telling you. What was boring about it?
Him. I could fall asleep listening to him.
No, there's some details in there that are critical.
I don't care about Mo.
Mo's a lost soul, right?
Mo looks like Owen Wilson.
His hairline is crazy, bro. It's smash gnarly.
Smash your his hairline is crazy.
It is nuts, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Cut this out, Tom.
Or don't. I don't care.
I can stay in. It's so no. I think his.
I think he should leave it in. I think people find that funny.
Okay,
that's fine. Whatever.
Okay.
I was yawning during it, so might as well explain myself.
All right, leave that whole thing in, Tom. Except for the part where I was like, gosh, hell. Or actually, no, you know what?
Leave this all, man.
All right. Okay, I'm sorry, Josh. Why do you think it's important?
I think it's important because it shows, especially since we just talked about where he came from.
There were some parts that were important.
And yeah. Confirmation. Like one of the details that we weren't able to find anywhere till this clip was that
his mom was killed.
His mom was killed at an early age. And he was also raised, you know, without really any religion, it sounds like, despite his parents' sort of their philosophical beliefs. And so he went through that early on in life, and who knows what other things happened throughout his life. So he was, as he said, I was a lost soul going into this. And so when he came across this book, it clearly had a profound effect on him. And
why do you think that is?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of reasons for it. And it's a massive, massive book, right? So like specifically here, he was clearly very interested in the untold story of Jesus, which he's gone on to write another book about as well.
And the last 800 pages of Urantia is about that specifically, right?
I don't know if it's the last 800, but it's a large chunk of it. Yeah.
No,
it's almost half of the book is about Jesus.
Out of the 2000, so yeah.
Right, right. So we're going to go into some of those teachings a little bit more and also attempt to help you understand the origins of the book a little bit better, because I think that's what we're all really interested in, is where did this come from? What's the origin story there behind this whole like channeled literature that was channeled by extraterrestrials supposedly? But in order to answer that question, we have to go back even farther, all the way back to the 1800s, of course, because we got to talk about Seventh-day Adventism and John H. Kellogg. Yes, the Kellogg man himself.
Kellogg man?
Mr. Cornflake.
Mr. Cornflake, yes. Cornflake. So going back, there was an influx of printed Bibles in the United States following the Second Great Awakening in the 1800s, which led many recent converts joining the Protestant Christian religion. And one of them, a Baptist preacher named William Miller, grew to prominence in the 1830s after he claimed that the second coming or advent of Christ would take place somewhere between March 1843 and March 1844. And apparently he calculated this window of time from events in the Old Testament. Rocket your money to the moon today. Get the rocket money app to join me on our adventure together to the Celestial Seasonings Factory. Just kidding. But really, you should get the Rocket Money app, because it is the personal finance app that will rocket your finances straight to the moon and beyond, to the other planets. But I love Rocket Money. If you can't tell, I'm a little excited to talk about it. I really do use this app. It's on my phone right here. I'd show you, but it's got all my personal information on it, and I don't necessarily want that getting out. But it's a great app. I look at it every morning. It makes me feel good. It gives me that shot of dopamine to the brain that I need. And it really helps me stay on top of our finances. It really helps. So if this is the first time you've ever heard of Rocket Money, it is a personal finance app that does so much for you, minus your laundry. It will actually help and cancel those unwanted subscriptions, because we all have them. They're everywhere. Everywhere you turn, every device you look at, it has a subscription. It can be a pain in the butt to manage those. So Rocket Money makes that super simple for you. List them all out. With a few taps, they'll even go and cancel those for you. So they take all the pain and stress out of managing and canceling them. Plus, it lets you know what's up with your spending, and it tells you when you're getting refunds, when your bills are coming out, direct deposits, ACHs, you name it. Rocket Money lets you know what's up with your finances. I love all the alerts they give you. But if you really love Rocket Money like I do, you'll get the premium version, because the premium version has even more features, such as credit monitoring, which is probably one of the most important things you could have in today's day and age. I mean, you need somebody or something monitoring your credit for you. There's too many scam artists out there, too many identity thieves. You got to be careful. You got to be careful, because credit is unfortunately everything. Plus, you've got your net worth tracker, which is good for everybody. You connect all your accounts, investment accounts, bank accounts, credit cards, whatever it may be, all in one place, and see, you know, how you're doing. There's so many other features that come with the premium version that it's definitely worth checking out, because you will save money in the long run. So cancel those unwanted subscriptions and reach your financial goals faster with Rocket Money. Go to rocketmoney.com/milehigher today. That's rocketmoney.com/milehigher today. rocketmoney.com/milehigher. But when March of 1844 came and went without Jesus, an event that would be known as a little disappointment, which is great.
Dang.
It was a little disappointment. Some of Miller's followers said that he was actually going to come on October 22nd, linking it with the cleansing of the sanctuary and the primary holy day in Judaism, Yom Kippur. At this point, Miller had over 100,000 followers who are following this proposed second coming, you know, with a bated breath. They're like, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. However, when the sun rose and set without Jesus announcing his second coming, people knew Miller had been way off, and this event would become known as the Great Disappointment.
They really the missed the opportunity to call it. Yes, we were saying earlier.
Tall, grande, and venti disappointments.
Why didn't they just say the large disappointment, though? Like, at least to in brand with what you're going here.
Because people are a little bit more pissed off this time. So it went from little to now
we're a little disappointed.
Now we're really pissed off that Jesus hasn't come back yet. What's going on here?
They could do it like a Cold Stone style with Like It, Love It, Gotta Have It.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
yes. That would be good. Yep. The Like It disappointment, mm-hmm. the Gotta Have It disappointment.
Gotta Have It disappointment.
So these Millerites, who were disappointed by how their core philosophy had been proven untrue, splintered off into new religious sects that many of us will know or heard of before in current day: Mormonism, Jehovah's Witnesses, and of course, the Seventh-day Adventists. Originally the smallest of the post-Millerite groups, the Seventh-day Adventists believed that the date Miller provided was correct, but it was never the second coming of Christ. Instead, they thought that the date signified Christ's work in heaven. And, you know, Christ just moved to a different department in heaven. You know, he had to move to a different part of the sanctuary there. And he was up there preparing for Judgment Day, you know, praying for judgment of all those below. And so the Adventists, their purpose then became preparing everybody on earth for Judgment Day. One of the most prominent figures of the church was a woman named Ellen G. White, who, along with her husband James and leader Joseph Bates, co-founded the church.
So Ellen, let's just take a moment to take a look at Ellen. I've been talking about how she looks like she was dipped in formaldehyde in this picture. I don't know what is going on there, but she's quite unfortunate. Don't you think, Jan?
Yeah, not great.
Like, what's happening?
I mean...
or it's like a wax figurine.
It's definitely waxy.
Yeah. Something's... well, everything about Ellen is waxy.
I think she's beautiful. No.
Ian, you're just trying to be too nice.
Stop.
Come on.
No.
Actually, maybe she was pretty, but like something about this picture... Well, you were saying that you think they were like, they edited this somehow.
They edited the fuck out of it.
Yeah, this is not just an unedited pic.
Something weird's happening here. She looks like she's dead and like being propped up.
Weekend at Bernie's style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That type of vibe.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you about Miss Ellen, okay? She became famous because she claimed to have had at least 200 prophetic visions straight from God himself, often in large group settings, because that's where you can get the most attention, of course. People noticed that when she received these visions, Ellen would chant, "Glory, glory, glory." I wonder what that was like. Like, how loud was it? Like, "Glory, glory, glory."
Or maybe it was, "Glory,
oh, glory,
glory."
Like, kind of creepy.
That would be.
Glory.
Oh, yeah, like, Smeagol style.
Yeah.
Sound like salad fingers there.
What's salad fingers?
Oh, we're not.
Okay.
We're not opening that.
After the pod.
Do you know Solid Fingers?
Of course, man. Okay, good. Of course.
Do you know Solid Fingers, Josh? He doesn't. No.
Okay. We'll keep it that way.
Yeah.
I don't think I need to know.
I'm going to Google it.
Back on track, people. Back to Ellen. Okay. So she would also display superhuman strength. And she wouldn't breathe for the duration of the vision, which is really not hard to fake that you're not breathing. Like, you just, you know, it's like ghosting. You know what I mean?
I can ghost.
Yeah, I know you can ghost.
Wait, what?
We'll explain it to you later, sweetie.
After the pod.
But she wouldn't breathe for the whole vision, and then her eyes would remain open without blinking somehow. And she would say D-A-R-K after she returned from the vision, seeing nothing and then just going limp.
Like that.
Kind of like the picture.
These kind of sound like symptoms of a demonic possession.
I think that's what she was going for.
I don't know if this is really prophetic visions from God, or maybe she's being visited by the devil.
I think this is extreme need for attention. But most of her visions, which her husband, of course, recorded, focused on Jesus and God as physical beings in the kingdom of heaven and cemented the Adventist view of the end times, of course. However, some of her other visions focused on health and disease, which would become a fundamental element of the church. So in 1866, under Ellen's direction, the church constructed the Western Health Reform Institute in Battle Creek, Michigan. And it was one of the first of many health institutes that it developed. In 1876, the institute changed its name to the Battle Creek Sanitarium, also called the SAN, after a new superintendent took over, John Harvey Kellogg. Now, we could do an entire episode on Mr. John Kellogg. His parents were vital to the early Adventist movement, even helping Ellen and James White relocate to Battle Creek after the great disappointment, the grande disappointment, if you will, the gotta love it disappointment. Now, John had 11 siblings, and since their family was focused on the imminent end times, they didn't provide much in the way of education because they're like, you're not going to need that shit. We're not going to be here much longer anyway. And from a young age, John began working with Adventist printers, hoping to spread the visions of Ellen that way. However, John took a special interest in what the pamphlets he was printing were saying about health, specifically related to the early vegetarian movement, abstinence as well, and maintaining a healthy lifestyle. I don't really get how abstinence fits into health.
They saw it as like a larger, like more or less spiritual health, you know, because they are, with the Adventists, at least at this time, they were very anti-sex outside of procreation and very anti-masturbation. And so if you partake in those things, you are spiritually unwell and therefore could be physically unwell as well.
So it wasn't about STDs for them.
No, they probably didn't even know what that was.
Don't you know if you have sex, you will get pregnant and you will die.
Right. Of course. Forgot for a second. Well, the high-ups noticed John's interest and funded his health education before he took over as the superintendent of the SAN. Now, the SAN was more of a resort for the rich and famous rather than a hospital or research facility. Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, John D. Rockefeller, President Warren Harding, Booker T. Washington, and even Amelia Earhart were all famous and frequent patients. And we could really do an entire episode focused on the odd treatments prescribed by Dr. Kellogg at the SAN. Weird. I mean, yeah, just the Kellogg family in general, we could probably do an episode.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let us know if you guys are interested. But he was, I love this about him. He was obsessed with taking 4 bowel movements a day.
Lucky.
I know, right? 4 BMs a day.
Those are rookie numbers, man.
Oh,
for Ian, I mean, yeah. Uh-huh. From what you've told me,
yep.
That is rookie.
That's nothing.
That's lucky for you.
That's a good day.
Mm-hmm. I'm lucky to get 1 a day, you know?
Yeah.
But he would prescribe 15-liter enemas to his patients to help ensure these frequent BMs. And sometimes he would use yogurt in place of water. Now, let's break down the numbers on that, how we did earlier. How many gallons of yogurt is that?
I think Josh said it was around 5 gallons of yogurt going up your butt.
Your ass. Yogurt up the arse. What do you think about that, Josh? You want to do it?
Milk by itself would be bad. 5 gallons of milk. So imagine 5 gallons of thick-ass Chobani yogurt.
Why would anyone do this?
Probiotics.
It probably feels good.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Potentially. I don't know.
I mean, at least it's soft. If I'm going to put anything up my butt, it's going to be yogurt. Soft.
Really? Anything?
Yeah. I mean,
learning
for
all.
An enema, it seems kind of like a smart idea, honestly. You're putting good bacteria up there.
Yeah, so Josh is telling our audience to go home to this.
I will try this the next time I need it.
Do it now on the show.
Yeah, next week, tune in, guys.
5 gallons of...
Okay, no. Please do not put yogurt up your booty, okay? The sand...
Just the mess, though. Because obviously you're going to have...
Okay, Virgo.
You're going to have overflow.
We're moving on, okay? People are clicking out. So I put a tarp and disgusted. Under... All right,
hell
you're done.
Yeah.
You're done.
Go outside, get a tarp.
You need a tarp and a water hose.
So the San even helped create breakfast cereal as we know it through the accidental creation of cornflakes, which would lead to a many decade long legal battle between John and his brother William, which we could get into on another episode. You got to just let us know. But what matters most to our episode today is that in 1894, John Kellogg took on a new protege, a young doctor named William S. Sadler, a new whack job, you could say.
So who is William Sadler? Well, my man was born on June 24th, 1875, and he was raised primarily in Spencer, Indiana. And like John Kellogg, his father didn't see the need for formal education because who needs that anyway? So his early exposure to medicine was self-taught. In 1888, William's father converted to the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and he followed, becoming devoted to Ellen White's mission. Only a year later, at 14, William moved to Battle Creek to work at the SAN, serving as a bellhop and helping John's brother in the test kitchen. At 16, William began taking courses at Battle Creek, which were heavily informed by John's views. William soon became a supporter of all Mr. Kellogg's world views, including his enema work. Very good work he's doing over there. Temperance as well, lack of caffeine, hatred of masturbation, and sex without procreation being the evilest of sins. Righteous men. He also held other views on race, which we'll get to later. In 1894, William graduated from the Health Institute and became an assistant to John's brother, selling health food, a line of work similar to Moe's decades later. William even came up with an idea to offer demonstrations in stores, leading to the popularity of cornflakes, which basically somebody can come up talk. Let's talk about the cornflakes.
What did you just say?
Somebody come get my...
You're in the supermarket, and there's a guy standing at the supermarket. He's like, hey, want to see cornflakes? You're like, oh, what's the cornflakes about? And then they hand him a small sample. They try them, and they say, yum.
They say,
delicious. cornflakes are a real hit. But William, you know, he loved the Windy City. He thought, you know, Chicago. I mean, it's where the World's Fair was. Hey, all the innovators went to Chicago back in the 1800s. I mean, let's be honest. We got the World's Fair going on there. So, like, let's establish a mission there. And Chicago plus Chicago hot dogs, top notch.
Wasn't H.A. Tolmes there around this time, too?
Yeah. Yeah, he was.
Right around here, maybe.
He's.
I don't know.
Well, H.H. Holmes was, wait a minute. Was H.H. Holmes in Chicago?
Yes, 100%.
He was? Okay. No, God, I'm thinking of Madame Bovary. Never mind. I was like, he's in New Orleans.
He moved to Chicago in 1886.
Yeah, so right around there.
Yeah.
Damn.
It was the place to be.
Chicago. What's that song? Is that from Victorious?
Oh, see, this is showing your age. You're a young one. Victorious. I was like in like college when that show was on.
And I enjoyed every episode.
No. No, I think it was in high school. Josh, you used to watch Victorious, right?
Victoria Justice?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ariana Grande.
Oh yeah, she was on that too, huh? That's how she got her fame.
Right. Okay.
Although I will always be loyal to Zoe.
Josh loves Zoe 101.
Zoe 101 is so fucking
Jamie
good.
Lynn Spears.
That was a great show. I wanted to like...
We don't like Jamie anymore, by the way. Jamie's done.
Man, how times have changed.
Oh, yeah.
I know when you look at me on camera, you think, God, Josh is such a fashion icon. Guy is a mogul. He knows what he's doing. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. I know nothing about clothes. I am wearing t-shirt, usually just some random shirt I found in a garbage bag in my garage. And then I'm wearing gym shorts and I'm wearing flip-flops. Like, that is what I live in. And, you know, today I have one of my nice shirts on. This is a nice shirt for me. But I hate shopping. I don't know anything about shopping. I see something, I buy it, I take it home. I don't know where to go. I don't know how to put an outfit together. I see these young kids out there, you know, at the skate park and they're looking fly. And I'm like, dude, I look old. I look so old. So I need help. I need help with my fashion. And so where do I get help? Well, Stitch Fix. If you haven't tried Stitch Fix and you're a guy, a woman, a child, you need to get their expertise because they know fashion like nobody else out there. They're in the trenches, in the style trenches, looking at what's hot right now. And they are working with all sorts of different brands to bring you the hottest outfits that you could not find anywhere else. And it's so easy because a personal stylist does it all for you. You don't have to do anything. I don't have to lift a finger. I click a few buttons on my computer and I say, I'll talk to you later. And then boom, Stitch Fix sends me a box right to my door. It's like Christmas every time it comes. I rip it open and I'm like, whoa, oh my God, I can't believe they thought this would be an item for me. And I put it on, dude, my cool meter goes up like 1,000%. I go to the grocery store and they're like, dude, what high school are you at, bro? And I'm like, whoa, I look that young? That's crazy. And that's all thanks to Stitch Fix, man. They're bringing me the hottest outfits I couldn't find anywhere else. I don't know what I would do without them at this point. I need to be dressed and I need Stitch Fix help. I just need it. I need it. And they make it so simple. Whatever you don't like, whatever you don't want to pay for, maybe you already got those cutoff jeans and you're like, I don't need the same cutoff jeans twice. They have a prepaid envelope, throw it back in, throw it in your mailbox, and boom. That's it. Goes back. It's easy. Then you let your Stitch Fix personal stylist, they follow up, you're like, yo, how'd you like that box? And you're like, that box was sick, bro. I want maybe this style, maybe a different, you know, colors. You weren't into that, then they fine tune it for you. It's personalized. It's easy. They have a style quiz. What else could you want? Have I sold you yet? Get started today at stitchfix.com/milehigher to get $20 off your first order. And they'll waive your styling fee. So cool. That's stitchfix.com/milehigher, baby. Get Stitch Fix. Anyways, William. He's up there in Chicago. He's up there. You know, he's staying clear of H.H. Holmes' operation up there around the same time. Hey, the World's Fair, though. Maybe they cross paths at one point. You never know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think he went to that, too. I'm pretty sure.
But in 1897, he married John Kellogg's niece, Lena Celestia Kellogg, who had been a nurse at the San. And what kind of name is that middle name? Celestia. It's kind of cool. But I don't know if I call her Celestial.
Again, I think she's another beautiful woman.
Ian, you think all women are beautiful?
No.
You really think? Okay, are you being honest?
No.
Lena's.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Maybe this was hot in 1889.
Yeah, you know what? She's not as bad as Ellen. I don't know. About the same, I guess.
Smash or pass, Ian.
I'll get back to you.
All right,
take the glasses off and we can play around.
Oh, I think the glasses help her.
But after their first child, Willis, died at only 10 months old, the couple decided to devote their lives to medicine. And William took a special interest in psychiatry and even moved to Europe for a year to study under Sigmund Freud himself.
Pretty fucking cool.
So like, these guys just that convincing. They just like, how they'd get in with Sigmund Freud?
Well, very different times.
However, while William adopted many of Freud's views on early childhood affecting an adult's brain, he rejected Freud's views on sexuality and religion, considering that he was a staunch Seventh-day Adventist. However, even that would change in 1907 when John Kellogg was excommunicated from the church following a conflict with Ellen White. And you see, everybody figured out that Ellen's prophetic visions were actually just bullshit, that she plagiarized from extremely popular written works.
And you believe that?
Couldn't even be creative enough to come up with your own original prophetic visions. No, she pulled them from John Milton's Paradise Lost.
Remember, like, pathetic visions.
Oh, shit.
Zing, zing.
John and much of the Kellogg family left the San, which would close down only a few years later, and joined William in Chicago, where they would continue their work. And while the Seventh-day Adventist Church had never acknowledged the fakery of one of its founding members, William publicly maintained a positive view of Ellen. Hey, it's just a mistake. Everybody makes mistakes, right?
Everybody has those days.
Let's go back to the Disney Channel conversation.
But at this point, he was no longer involved in the church. In addition, William began publishing multiple works discrediting the abilities of psychic mediums and others who claimed to receive messages from the dead. Because this was the era of psychic mediums, man. This was like when it was hot, really hot, and people were really, really into it and believed everybody they met that was psychic.
All you got to do is say I'm a psychic. You're in. You got friends and attention.
But this is this became strange when considering what came next for Mr. William Sadler and the Kellogg clan.
So according to the official legend behind the Urantia book, between 1906 and 1911, William's wife, Lena the plug, Celestia Kellogg, had a premonition that a young woman would come to her with important information. Then one of their assistants asked Lena, Dr. Sadler, could observe her husband while he slept. And he was entering a much deeper sleep than normal and saying strange things as if someone else was speaking through him. What the fuck is happening here? And on his first examination of the patient, William noticed that the man did make very unusual movements before speaking to him in a strange, guttural voice, saying that he was a visitor from another planet. Oh, my God. Now, this strange behavior continued, and William claimed to have tried to make a scientific diagnosis of the patient, of course, while he was awake, although he seemed perfectly fine when he was awake. Trying to find some explanation, William invited five other doctors to examine the sleeping man, speaking to him as he continued to claim that he was an extraterrestrial visitor, attempting to give William and others the ultimate knowledge of existence and the known universe. The information we all want to know, right? Well, this examination continued for over a decade until William began hosting weekly tea gatherings in his home. Up to 50 guests were allowed to come over and monitor the sleeping man as he spoke. And then, in 1925, William discovered a handwritten document in the patient's home. And once again, the document claimed to have been written by extraterrestrials who were attempting to channel their message through this man to the rest of the group. And as other documents appeared within the patient's home, William decided to close off the membership. He ended up cutting the group down to just 30 people who were all sworn to secrecy regarding the messages and the identity of the sleeping man. And as the papers stopped appearing in the patient's home, William decided that the ones he had discovered previously were genuine. And in 1935, he announced that he was the group's leader
and that he was tasked with writing down the words of the celestial beings through the sleeping man. Now, William's wife, Lena, passed away in 1939, and other group members began noticing that William took on a much more authoritative approach to the sleeping man's words at this point. An unknown member was kicked out of the group after he claimed that William had grown power-hungry in his wife's absence. Shocking. Now, in addition, a man named Harold Sherman joined the Urantia group with his wife in 1941, and the couple was very intrigued by what they were hearing. Now, Harold knew that William was collecting the words to be published in a larger work, and assuming it would be one of psychiatric research, he asked William to incorporate research about psychics and communication with the dead. This enraged William, who still believed that communication with the dead was not allowed by God, and these words were different because they were being channeled by living celestial beings. Now, when Harold suggested that William might be over-editing and even rewriting a little bit the words of the sleeping man, they were both kicked out of the group, and William called it a rebellion. So that tells you a lot about him, right? And others who had known William felt that Ellen White's lies had deeply impacted him, and he needed something to replace her prophetic visions. And any critique of William's work would lead him stating that much of his previous writings had been done to discredit bogus mediums, and the words of the sleeping man were completely genuine. In 1950, William and the others created the Urantia Foundation and finally published the Urantia book in 1955. And William did not want his followers to proselytize the book and would rather others create book clubs to discuss the work than create full-fledged churches. He published numerous defenses of the book and always maintained the author was a celestial being, which was printed on the cover. But what is the content of the Urantia book? Well, it is complete batshit, you guys. Let's hand it over to Josh here to tell you more about why.
Yeah, it's hard to follow, at the very least. I mean, you thought you understood astronomy, the universe, or even your own spiritual beliefs. Well, get ready to have all that blown out of the water by this confusing hodgepodge here. All right. Which I just want to say, there are people out there who you might actually look up to or like who have called the Urantia an important book, a great piece of literature.
Who?
For one, Jimi Hendrix.
Really?
Jimi Hendrix was a big fan of the Urantia book.
Jimmy. Damn, I didn't know that.
Kind of doesn't surprise me just because it did, like in Moe's case, it struck a chord with a lot of people who were, aside from just like interested in New Age beliefs, also interested in like combining sci-fi with Christianity.
Yes.
So it definitely, like, if you were kind of into sci-fi, this is like the big 2,000 page sci-fi book. Let me check it out. And, you know, a lot of people kind of found it through that way as well, not just this the Christian element of it.
Okay.
Yeah, Jimi Hendrix apparently carried the Urantia book with him. And
ooh, I don't like that.
He told friends he learned much from it. It was often called an alternative Bible by those close to him.
Jimmy.
Because as Ian said, Jimi Hendrix was known to be a big fan of sci-fi and spiritual literature. So he explicitly listed it as one of his favorite readings. Stevie Ray Vaughan, lots of musicians, interestingly enough. He's reported to have carried the book and studied it during his spiritual and recovery journey. Janelle's not going to like this one. Jerry Garcia.
Shut up.
Described the Urantia book as one of his favorite esoteric works.
Wait, what the fuck?
And a big influence on his worldview.
Ew. I think none of them read this fucking book, clearly.
It's you think it was just like trendy, pages. They'd read like a part of it?
Yes.
2,000 pages isn't that much. They're carrying it around with them?
No, a 2,000 page book's pretty thick.
That's pretty thick.
Yeah, I know, but if they like, have it with them Bible? All the time, they're like, I live by this, it changed my life, you think they would have read it?
No, my guess is that, because all of the people that Josh is listing off have some sort of similarity to them. My guess is that they picked out parts of it that they resonated with, and then
that's how a lot of people
the eugenics in there or something. Because I'm just like, what?
That's how a lot of people, well, I mean, if you think about it this way. So the Bible's 1,200 to 1,600 pages, depending on the edition that you're reading.
Yeah, so people aren't 2,000?
Always, yeah, people aren't always reading the Bible cover to cover. In fact, I'd argue a lot of Christians probably haven't read the Bible cover to cover.
Probably like majority.
So a lot of people will reference, like, that's why the Bible's broken down into different books, right, within it. So that's kind of how the Urantia is broken down to like different sections, different books within it. So there's a possibility that people may be, have been like, I don't care about... Because there's, one could argue you could separate portions of it, right? Like maybe you wanted, you're just interested in the story, untold story of Jesus, and you want to know more about that because you also read the Bible and you know that story of Jesus. You know what I mean? So I think that's probably what a lot of these people were doing. Because there's Steve Vai, another artist, Carlos Santana, Tons of artists have drawn inspiration from the Urantia, explicitly in their music.
Yeah, this doesn't entirely surprise me, honestly, because it's a very like out there, you know, type of writing. And so a lot of these people who he's naming off have that kind of common denominator with them.
And I will say the eugenics, even though it is like a central part of their belief, it is mainly relegated, like Josh said, to one section, similar to how the Bible is split up. Hmm. So there is a chance that maybe they just were reading the crazy, you know, Luciferian war that we'll get to, or any of the other elements of it, but just simply didn't get to the history of Earth, which is where the eugenics is located.
Okay. Huh. All right.
Jerry Garcia, he said it's one of his favorite esoteric works. So it's like the way that he describes it to me is like he has interest in lots of different esoteric works. So you could argue the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. You know, there's lots of other books that are similar. The Law of One is another very interesting series that is channeled literature as well. And so it could be just one book in the library. Then, you know, he's like, just reading portions of it, and maybe there's some things that he took away from it, not all of it. That's the thing, is like a book like that. It's like, I don't know if this is a fair comparison, but say you give somebody like an encyclopedia or an almanac, are you going to claim everything in the almanac? Like, I agree with everything in the almanac, or I agree, you know, I understand everything in the encyclopedia. Well, usually you're picking up one of those books because there's certain parts of it that you're interested in. And you're not necessarily reading it cover to cover. And I think that's how a lot of, because 2,000 pages.
That's a like, lot.
That's huge.
Those dudes weren't almost, reading that thing front to back.
Right. That's a ton of reading. So as I call it at the beginning, a spiritual epic. It's got this cosmic style delivery, you know, flavor of sort of the biblical origin stories in it. But obviously, you know, there is the racial part of it as well. But anyways, the Urantia contains 196 papers or essays that were channeled by celestial beings through the sleeping man. Part one, titled The Central and Super Universes, focuses on the highest levels of creation, which the celestial beings maintain is God. And the center of the universe, known as the Master Universe, is filled with the enormous Isle of Paradise, which is the largest single object in the universe. The Isle is completely outside our space and time and is made of matter called Absolutum, which is neither living nor dead matter and only exists in paradise. I first saw this next monster on social media several months ago as they were first rolling out, and I was really intrigued. I started watching all their videos, I started listening to some of the other health leaders out there talking about this service, and that's why I'm excited to tell you about Function Health. Function is what happens when healthcare catches up. The First Health membership gives you access to 100 plus biomarkers across the whole body. We're talking hormones, metabolism, inflammation, heart, liver, and so much more. Plus, you can add on MRI and CAT scans as well. Function gives you medical grade insights. And the great thing about it is that you track your results over time. So you can really compare year over year how your body's actually doing. So when you get your Function Health membership, basically you're going to go and give blood. And they make the process really, really simple. It is a little bit more blood than probably what you're used to. I think it's 10 vials I have to take. But they make the process extremely seamless. They even give you a chill playlist on Spotify to listen to while you're getting your blood drawn. And they give you tips on how to stay calm. Because I'm not going to lie, I'm a little squeamish when it comes to blood draws. I have passed out in the past from blood draws. So they usually lay me down. Because they're like, it's always the biggest guys that have the toughest time with blood draws. And that's unfortunately me. So I'll be laying there, eyes closed, breathing, listening to the chill playlist. things to function, but I'm excited to get the results. A little nervous, but excited as well, because I mean, I'm getting older. I'm a parent now. I want to make sure that I'm in tip-top shape, right? I want to make sure I live a long, long time. But function makes the whole process simple. You get your two blood draws, and then you get your initial results, and then you retest over time to see how those results change. And you're getting results that you wouldn't get anywhere else, 100 plus biomarkers, and you can add on additional tests that they have, like cancer screenings, and anything else you feel like you want to test for. Learn more and join using our link. The first 1,000 get $100 credit toward their membership. Visit www.functionhealth.com/milehigher or use gift code milehigher100 at sign up to own your health. A lot of this is not going to make sense for you. It's okay.
I also think absolutum is like one of the funniest like fake names for an element.
Right.
It's like unobtainium.
Exactly. It's absolute matter. Yeah. Okay. And this is where the great I Am resides, also known as our creator or God. And he had a creator son named Michael, who is incarnated on Urantia or Earth as Jesus Christ. And this God had many other sons, all devoted to a unique universe or solar system. And one of his other sons, Mashiveta Meshizadek. Thank you. What's the difference? But this son waged an intergalactic war against Lucifer 200,000 years ago. So this is like the sci-fi epic, man. We got Lucifer versus Meshizadek. You know, they're going at it, clanging swords, man. 200,000 years ago, Lucifer was another one of the great God's sons, though he had rebelled against paradise. So you see how it's kind of a different flavor, different spin on the biblical story. Lucifer's not a fallen angel. You know, he's actually one of the sons of God. Surrounding paradise are three elliptical orbits, each containing seven worlds. And around these 21 worlds are seven elliptical rings, each containing a billion perfectly timeless worlds. Doesn't make sense. That's okay. This is the universe of Havana, or you guessed it, heaven. Very original. Havana, heaven. While God does not reside in Havana, it is similar to paradise. And it wasn't created, but simply always existed. And beyond all this are seven super universes, which are imperfect and rely on the work of God's sons to become perfect. Each contains 100,000 local universes, and Urantia is in the seventh of these super universes. Urantia is number 606 in a planetary group called Satania.
God.
Because this reads like a sci-fi book, right?
Right.
Just infused with biblical inspiration. Satania contains 616 inhabited worlds and 200 more that are progressing towards habitation. The headquarters of Satania is a planet called Jerusalem, not Jerusalem, but close. Whatever's channeling this, it was not very creative. This is all just like pulling things from actual Earth. Satania exists within a larger grouping with an additional headquarter planet called Edentia, or Garden of Eden style. But let's focus on Jerusalem for a second. It's 100 times the size of Urantia. One of their miles is equal to seven of ours, and a year is equal to 100 Urantia days. And time is broadcasted by something known as Master Chronodex. Don't ask me what that means. I don't know. It's a Chronodex, though. But basically, Jerusalem is just a bigger, better Urantia, and there are no seasons. Technology keeps it at a perfect 70 degrees year-round, which kind of be kind of cool. That's a nice temperature. And all planets in Satania hope to progress to the level of Jerusalem. So going back to our good old friend, Mashiveta Meshizadek, Urantia is in a unique position because it is too far away from the other inhabited planets. I need like a fucking map for this. They really should have made some illustrations for this. This is, it's hard to conceptualize in your brain. Therefore, it has little guidance aside from divine intervention. But part three focuses on the history of Urantia, beginning with Adam and Eve. It asserts that the tree of knowledge was transported from Edentia, and both Adam and Eve reside in that system now. It also states that while our bodies and minds are created at birth, we do not receive any souls until the age of six. So for the first 6 years, yeah, we're just a mindless flesh vehicle with no soul. And these souls are known as our thought adjusters. They are a fragment of God designed to live within us. But the history of Earth section is the most controversial. We'll talk about this in a sec, because it describes all of humanity as coming from six races. 500,000 years ago, the Sangkik family in northern India produced 19 children whose skin changed to one of six colors. The primary colored races of red, yellow, and blue, and secondary colored races of orange, green, and purple, which the book explicitly states are quote-unquote inferior. The fourth and largest section of the Urantia book is dedicated to the life and teachings of Jesus, clocking in at around 775 pages.
Isn't it the indigo? I guess purple and indigo are kind of interchangeable.
Well, and there's also, like, as they continued to reproduce with one another, like, intermixing, which...
You get different colors.
You get different colors. And that's part of why the book, we'll get to it, but they think that that was bad. They think that that was bad.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Can't switch up the colors.
So stupid.
But this followed Jesus from when he was still a celestial being known as Michael, who reincarnated as every tier of life form until he was at the lowest, a mortal on Urantia. Now, the Urantia book makes a major creative difference by saying that Jesus was not the result of miraculous conception, but rather one of 700,000 creator sons who came to be incarnated on earth through traditional birth. And the Urantia book follows Jesus as he traveled to Rome, Greece, and India, and even studied at the Library of Alexandria. According to them, he was handsome, had a strong sex drive, but he still abstained from sex. His crucifixion was not to die for our sins, but rather to serve as a warning to new religious leaders on earth. And he was simply reincarnated as his original form, Michael, and showed up numerous more times on earth to help shepherd its people. That was a mouthful. This whole book is
a mouthful. And a mouthful.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a long ass book, 2000 pages. And there's certainly something we've overlooked that followers of the Urantia book will be angry about. What's most important is that we look at some of the controversies that have been spurred by the book, namely racist eugenics.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
So it gets worse from here.
So the first controversy concerns the Urantia book's authorship and the sleeping subject's identity. For one, since the Urantia Foundation still refuses to make the subject known and maintains that celestial beings wrote this damn book, they could not get a new copyright since aliens, of course, cannot receive trademarks, duh. And due to this, the book is in the public domain. And some have pointed to a man named Wilbur Kellogg, one of the Cornflakes family, as the sleeping subject's true identity. And some say it was William Sadler himself, which I'm on that side. I think it was Willie.
Yeah, I think he just made it all up.
Yeah. I mean, he was like hosting it all. It just checks out to me. And Wilbur was just a cover up for a larger group, especially once he started having like people and cut down the numbers and swore them to secrecy. I don't know. Or it was Wilbur. I don't know. One of the two of them.
However, most agree that William heavily edited or outright wrote most of the Urantia book himself. I fully believe that, as it includes many sections on ideas that he wrote about otherwise, including, yes, eugenics. Now, William's interest in eugenics began when he was learning from John Kellogg himself, who had founded the Race Betterment Foundation, which is a eugenist foundation whose main goal was to call attention to the dangers which threatened the white race. Yeah, you heard that right. And William wrote three eugenicist books outside of the UB, titled Long Heads and Round Heads, or What's the Matter with Germany, Racial Decadence, an examination of the causes of racial degeneration in the United States, and The Truth About Heredity. Great, great books there. And through these books, William advocated that unfit races should be sterilized and that some races are more moral than others. Some of the words throughout these books are reprinted exactly in the UB. So it checks out. Okay, he wrote the book. Now, his wife, Lena, also called for mandatory sterilization laws and said, ultimately, this monster will grow to such hideous proportions that it will strike us down. And these words were published in a collection called A Decade of Progress in Eugenics. Now, in the UB, the celestial being stated that Adam and Eve really fucked up racial harmonization on Earth. And therefore, quote, you must now work out your own planetary problem of race improvement by other and largely human methods of adaption and control. This, and this includes biologic renovation of the racial stocks, the selective elimination of inferior human strains. So really fucked up stuff. There's also plenty of outwardly racist lines throughout the book that we are definitely not going to repeat here that are even worse than what we just read. But more importantly, the question is, how do followers today view it? Well, the Urantia Foundation has the complete, unedited book right there on their website with all of the original racist lines still intact, and contemporary followers have chosen to be more careful on the subject, at least publicly.
So let's go back to the Celestial Seasonings founder, Mo Siegel, for a moment. He said that the Urantia book states that all persons are equal in the sight of God. However, his other words reflect the original intent of the Urantia book. After using Urantia to inspire his company name, ethics, and quotes, Mo retired from Celestial Seasonings and then became head of the Urantia Foundation. The brother of founder Wick Hay and Urantia follower John Hay left Celestial Seasonings in 1985, and they would go on to become the CEO of Rudy's Organic Bakery. I'm sure you've probably heard of that before.
I do love Rudy's.
It's good bread. Mm-hmm. In a since edited blog post titled The 20 Most Asked Questions of the Urantia Book, Mo wrote, quote, unfortunately, several factors hinder progress toward the development of a disease-free world. The laws of genetics are immutable and form the physical cornerstone of evolution. At the present time, mankind loses about as much progress as it makes by ignoring eugenics.
My God.
The foundation even invested in genetics and eugenics research in 2010. However, their findings have not been made public. And more importantly, there are no adverse health effects from having mixed race children. Although, why? We don't even really need to say that. We all know that. While the Urantia book doesn't seem to have spawned a traditional cult, people are still allowed to live their lives and remain in contact with their family. But their beliefs on the foundation of the world indeed border on cult-like and antisocial behaviors for sure. And they don't have to live in a closed group or try to recruit others, although many do. I mean, they obviously want support. They're a nonprofit, so they've got to make money to somehow.
Well, and when I was researching this, I had completely forgotten, but I came across one of our shorts about Chelsea Grimm, if you guys remember.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
One of the theories was that she had joined a cult out in the middle of Arizona.
Right.
And it was, I believe the name was Gabriel of Urantia. So there certainly are small cults. They're not like officially part of the Urantia Foundation.
Right.
But small communities and cults that the that certain followers have established on their own.
Wasn't that in Sedona?
Yes. Yeah. If you know, if that's, if my memory serves me correctly, I can't really remember.
Well, but it's kind of like wild out there, but right. Yeah. Wow.
So yeah, you could take this really far and really try to live true to the book, right? Live by the book. And there's people out there that do that. But yeah, this is something that I didn't really need to know about at the end of the day. This is it's a very strange though, for sure. But the good thing is that Celestial Seasonings, you can drink your tea and not feel like you're supporting a horrible organization. They were they went through a sale, and it sounds like I think this group called the Hain Group.
And now it's Hain Celestial.
Hain and Celestial. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Now owns it. So no relation with Mr. Siegel anymore or anybody else from your Rancho, as far as we know. Those days are gone. But pretty wild beginnings.
Yeah, it certainly is.
And
tea's still good, though, gotta say.
It's good stuff.
Got one last drop.
Yeah, I wonder if like anything changed internally within the company. Like,
oh, sure.
as far as ingredients or like the recipes or anything like that, or if that's all intact from when Mo created the initial like Sleepy Time recipe.
Well, I do know when they were attempting to, it wasn't included because it doesn't have to do with Urantia, but when they were trying to move more into wellness focused teas with supplements and stuff, they were kind of filed some class action lawsuits and stuff. So they definitely it's not just herbal. A lot of it, like the peppermint, if you look on it, the only ingredient is peppermints, but peppermint.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But if you look at some of the more, like we were saying, the wellness line, they have a bunch of other stuff in there that has caused issues for them in the past.
Interesting. So, this peach and probiotics be? It's like to nourish your body.
Well, I think they were making false claims at one point and they got sued. Like they were saying their
sounds about
tea
right.
was organic or all organic, and they weren't able to say that.
Well, that's what Mo said in that ad.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they definitely skipped some things they should have.
Yeah. Whoopsie.
Now they're just another evil corporation, like all of them. So it's, yeah.
Hey, they are a Colorado business.
I know.
All right?
My bad.
They are supporting the local economy here.
Okay.
There's good Coloradoans that work there. All right. It's not all evil.
We've got Celestial and we've got Coors, which also has some crazy ass beginnings.
Does
as well.
It? Mm-hmm.
Not cult like, just crazy historical stuff. But
enough for an interesting episode, or no?
There is kind of a Chappaquiddick style event.
Ooh, a Chappaquiddick style event.
A Chappaquiddick event with one of the descendants of Adolf Coors himself.
Oh damn! Okay, maybe we'll have to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Wow. Stay tuned to see what we get into next. But that's going to be it for this episode of Mile Higher.
Let us know if you had ever heard of Urantia before. I'm curious.
Yeah, I'm sure some people have.
Or if you have, what is your favorite Celestial seasoning tea?
Do you have some in your house?
Let us know. But I need to go wash my brain.
Yeah, me too. Like,
dunk it.
Gross.
In a gallon of yogurt.
Okay.
But that is it for us today. Thanks so much for joining us. If you enjoyed the episode, like or subscribe wherever you're listening or watching. We appreciate it. But we'll see you guys next week. Till then.
Keep on taking your mind a mile higher.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Does Friendly have a taste? If it does, it's probably like Hello's peppermint-flavored anti-plaque and whitening toothpaste. Brush away plaque, show Tartar who's boss, and remove surface stains to naturally whiten. Hello's thoughtful and flavor-forward products make brushing your teeth feel like a confetti-filled bathroom dance party. So say hello to Hello with the always cruelty-free, never tested on animals toothpaste that's made to spread smiles. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at WashableSofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit WashableSofas.com today and save. That's WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.